right, welcome to the show, and we got a good one. I'm Greg Jennings, he's Mark Slayer. And for Whitlock and Wiley, we're joined today by former Pro Bowler TJ Houshmandzadeh, the founder of the Big League, Jason McIntyre. Let's begin today in Dallas, where the Cowboys are getting ready for a wild card showdown with the Seahawks on Saturday. It will be Dak Prescott's first playoff game since his rookie year. And while his up and down season has some people doubting the Cowboys, Dak says his success shouldn't be measured by the regular season.
I don't pay attention to any stat but wins and losses. So when you say success of a quarterback or a quarterback success, depending on what they do in the playoffs, I think that's where the checks get written and they make their money, to be honest. Our job is to win, no matter what happens, no matter how you play individually. At the end of the day, it's to get the job done. Excited for my opportunity to be obviously back in the playoffs, missing it last year, but excited for this team and just knowing what we've got.
Mark, we just heard what Dak Prescott said. Do you believe he will prove doubters wrong in this postseason?
Well, one, it's not about proving your doubters wrong, because it doesn't matter what you do, you're always going to have a bunch of doubters. I mean, that's what people do, right? Especially with the advent of social media. That's what, you know, people just sit on there and troll you and doubt you, and that's the way it goes. He said he was going to be measured by his playoff success, right? He said, one, that it's not about stats, it's about wins and losses. Well, you're 0-1 in the playoffs, and you played exceptionally well when you got there, but ultimately your team did not win that game. That's what it comes down to for me is, do you play well enough to give your team an opportunity? The thing I love about the National Football League, it's the ultimate team game. Like, everybody has to, we're all dependent on one another. You can't catch a ball if I don't block my guy. You can't catch a ball if, you know, the quarterback doesn't have time to establish and throw you the route. I mean, it's just the way the National Football League works, and that's what I love about it. But, you know, if you're out there going, I'm going to go prove my doubters wrong, that to me is never the motivation. You want, it's not about proving your doubters wrong. It's about proving the team and your teammates correct, right, for having faith in you. And it's about going out there and sacrificing for those guys. So that's really what you're playing for.
I like your point about it's not about proving the doubters wrong. However, in this case, when it comes to Dak Prescott, I like him speaking out. I like him in this mode, because in week 14, if we look back, when Philly called him out, he ends up having a career day, 455 passing yards, three touchdowns, 78% completion percentage. Phenomenal game. I like what he's done in the postseason, his rookie year.
Right.
Again, another phenomenal showing, over 300 yards passing, 100-yard rusher, 100-yard receiver. But it came all down to the guy across the field, Aaron Rodgers. And that's what it will come down to this Saturday, the guy across the field. It still wasn't good enough. I think he will prove his doubters wrong, but I don't think it will be enough.
I'm kind of with you, Greg. I just don't know if he can prove anybody wrong. Like, if they win with the ground game, hey, Zeke Elliott was tremendous. If Dak has a great game passing, well, Amari Cooper, he went bananas. Or it was the defense shutting down the Saints. For some reason, whether it's the media, whether it's other NFL players or fans, they don't want to give Dak the credit. I don't know if this goes back to Tony Romo, who was beloved, we know, or maybe it's Dak's inability to perform in the red zone. Guys, he was one of the worst red zone quarterbacks this year. 51% completions. That's worse than any other quarterback in the playoffs, if you remove Lamar Jackson, who only started 7 games. But Dak's got to get it done in the red zone. You can't settle for threes against Russell Wilson. I think that's going to be the key to this game, and I kind of hope he does prove them wrong. This guy's an underdog, right? Mid-round draft pick. Nobody thought Dak Prescott would be in another playoff game just 3 years into the NFL.
For me, it's not about proving anybody wrong or right, because it's what you said. Dak Prescott's not going to get his credit. If they win the game, it's going to be, oh, Amari Cooper played great, or the running game was great, or the defense. He's not going to get his credit. For some reason, we like to pick on Dak Prescott like he's not good enough. Now, with that being said, you talk about his red zone percentage. The Dallas Cowboys, offensively, they're not very creative. You watch their red zone concepts, they're not very creative. It's, we're going to run this route, you got to win. We're not going to get in a bunch of alignments and get guys open. You know what I'm talking about, where the system will get guys open. Certain coaches do a great job of getting you open. Mm. Other coaches, the receivers have to get open. And so for me, Dak Prescott, just go play well. Whatever happens, happens. Because I don't believe he's going to get credit either way, because they're going to give it to somebody else anyway.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, though? For me, and I look at the way this offense is going to be orchestrated, in the playoffs. I think one of the things that's happened, when you look back to his rookie year, so much more of the collegiate system that they were running. I think he's got an old soul. I actually like Dak Prescott. I like him as a quarterback, and I think he's a good quarterback. I think when he was performing at his peak efficiency, there was a lot more RPO stuff, one receiver routes, using him in the red zone to run the ball. That's where he's going to flourish. Now, I think the Dallas Cowboys have understood that is not a long-term recipe for health and success. Right, so we're gonna mold him into a more traditional type of quarterback. But at this point, you're in the playoffs, man. Katie bar the door. You go back to the collegiate stuff that he's best at, like running the ball. There needs to be 7-8 designed runs for quarterback runs, especially in the red zone. A bunch of RPO aspects to your, you know, where you're
and
flagging
but see,
that
Seattle,
ball.
They're not a confuse you type of defense.
No,
we're gonna line up. We're gonna play single high safety, one safety in the middle, and we're coming after you. We're gonna man your receivers up.
Play an 8-man box. We're going to play cover three in a matchup zone.
Now listen, in the first meeting, I believe it was week three, he did not have Amari Cooper. So hopefully, you know, the offense won't be as bad as they were in the first meeting because they could not move the football against Seattle in that first game.
I want to go back to something the both of you said about Dak Prescott not being able to prove any of his doubters wrong. I think that is a little different from my point of view, because when I look at him last season, he had a great opportunity in front of him when Ezekiel Elliott was out of the lineup, those six games, to prove everyone wrong, to make sure that this is his team, I can win with or without Ezekiel Elliott. He failed to do that, and I think that's when
I would say how many quarterbacks actually are constructed that way?
There's like, not one quarterback and remember, in the league except for Tom Brady that can win with nothing.
Dez Bryant was a total non-factor last year. They ended up dumping him, right. Like Jason Witten about to go to the football.
I agree with all of that, but he didn't perform well. It wasn't even about winning necessarily. He just didn't perform well. And I think that's where we put so much onus on Dak Prescott. Right. Is he going to step up? Can he perform in the big games? Can he be the difference maker without his marquee guys stepping up for him?
All right, speaking of performance, to New England we go, where Tom Brady may have led the Patriots to another first-round bye, but that hasn't stopped some people from claiming that the 41-year-old's age is finally starting to catch up with him. Just don't tell that to the fine folks at Pro Football Focus, who have Brady ranked as the fifth best QB in the National Football League. Greg, do you think that Brady is a top five quarterback this season?
Now, I'm going to get a lot of
flat you are.
With this. I don't think he's a top five quarterback this season. I don't. In this list, we got Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes, Andrew Luck, Phillip Rivers. We saw the names. But we're missing Russell Wilson.
Yes.
Russell Wilson, in my opinion, is number five. And when you look at the numbers, passer rating, Tom Brady is number 12. Russell Wilson, number three. 19th in completion percentage is Russell Wilson. 18th is Tom Brady. You go down the yards per pass attempt. 9th is Russell Wilson. 13th is Tom Brady. 3rd is Russell Wilson in touchdown passes this year. Out of all the quarterbacks, Russell Wilson is 3rd. Tom Brady is 10th. 18th, Russell Wilson is passing yards. 7th is Tom Brady. These numbers let me know. If this is what we're going off of, Russell Wilson is better quarterback right now. And he's had to work with the best rushing team in all of football. Meaning, when I mentioned the passing yards, yeah, his passing yards are going to be less because he's not had to throw as much.
Right. Well, I will tell you, this is why I would disagree with you. And I think Russell Wilson's phenomenal. Don't get me wrong. But Tom Brady's the world's greatest American. Okay? let's put that out there right now, okay? But I will tell you this. Like, I did their first game of the season. Their first two games. I didn't do their second game, but their first two games. Pete Carroll told me in a meeting, like, we tried to make this a passing offense. That was our mistake. We tried to say, hey, this is the way we're going to be. This has to be run first, basically control the line of scrimmage, open up your play-action game. That's where Russell Wilson's going to thrive. Russell Wilson was horrible in the first two games of the season. They run it at a 55%. They run it by far more than anybody else in the National Football League. I think 55% of their plays are run plays. It sets up the play action. It creates one-on-one just unbelievable matchups for them in the passing game. So I look at it like Tom Brady, you said this earlier, Tom Brady is the only guy in America that can have nothing around him and still, to me, still, what do we need to run it? Do we need to throw it? Do we need to get it to our backs? Do we need to throw it down the football field? Whatever the case may be, Gronk wasn't the same Gronk that he was. I mean, Tom Brady still, for me, is in, I don't care where you rank him, and if you want to put Russell in the top five, great, I'll pull somebody else, but Tom Brady is not coming out of my top five.
All right, I'll let you go, TJ, because I got to calm down first.
I'm with you on that. Tom Brady has to be in the top. You just look at what he's working with. And I said this earlier. I went back and watched some tape of Gronk from 2011 and 12. Just watch him move then and watch him move now. It's Tom Brady. Like, you look at Russell Wilson. Anytime you go to a run-first offense, your own coach is saying, he ain't good enough to just throw the ball and win the game for us. Your own coaching staff is telling you, we don't think you're good enough to win the game with your arm. That's what Tom Brady does. Tom Brady, he doesn't have one skilled player on his team that would start for anybody else in the league.
I don't think he's saying you're not good enough to win the game. Because when the game is on the line in the fourth quarter, you're not running the football. You're relying on
early in the season, it showed. That's why they went to a run-dominant offense, because they were trying to throw the ball. They weren't winning games.
Edelman was suspended early.
The fourth quarter, the last minute and a half, yeah. But to me, that's schoolyard. That is, hey, run around, extend the play, be schoolyard, not operate from the pocket.
And let's remember, Russell Wilson also did not have Doug Baldwin for chunks of the season. Since he's been back, they've been tremendous. I think I'm with Greg here. Without question, Russell Wilson's above Brady. And again, if you just want to look at the pure numbers, and as you guys said, who they're working with, okay? How come Baker Mayfield doesn't crack this top five? If you look across the board, his numbers, just the stats, with three fewer games, his numbers are right there with Tom Brady. And he's throwing to a guy at tight end who's nowhere near Gronk's level.
Look at the stats. You cannot go off years past. Gronkowski is not Gronkowski this year.
Okay, fine. I'll give you that.
Njoku is a baller.
He's a baller. I mean, Josh Gordon was with the Patriots for half the season. He was tremendous. Okay, Edelman came back. Good receiver. Who's Baker Mayfield working with? Antonio Callaway? Really? Jarvis Landry?
I'm telling you, if you want to go play by play. Antonio Callaway start for the New England Patriots?
Of course.
100%.
Of course.
Would the Patriots receiver start in Cleveland? Absolutely not.
Who? Seriously, you're benching Edelman. Tom Brady has better receivers.
And he probably
than
wouldn't
anybody
start. He'd
on
be
there.
The third receiver.
Look, I mean, Andrew Luck's guys aren't starting anywhere. They weren't even in the league.
That's another false statement that people make. Andrew Luck has nobody. T.Y. Hilton has been balling in the league for 5, 6, 7 years. Has he not?
He has.
He's going to Eric Ebron, a guy who was kicked out of Detroit. Nobody wanted him.
Edelman's a receiver. He was drafted Naeem Hines for a reason.
I mean, so all of a sudden the Patriots supporting cast stinks? Is that where we're going? Is that what you really want to hang your hat on?
I will tell you this now, having called the Cleveland game, they are an incredibly talented football team. And I'm telling you, offensive line-wise, I would put their inside three guys.
They're good.
Shredder, Batonio, and their right guard, he's escaping my mind. But I would put their inside three guys against any inside three in the National Football
League. So skill position, you think Tom Brady has not very good play. Is that what we're saying?
Time out.
Me? No. If you're asking me, he does. Compared to other quarterbacks in the league,
I'm just
Drew Brees, you got a Michael Thomas. Patrick Mahomes got Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Phillip Rivers, you have Keenan Allen. You got Mike Williams. You got Melvin Gordon. People want to say Gronkowski. Gronkowski is a shell of himself. Dude, did you see when they put him on?
I had him on my fantasy team. He let me down. Okay? I watched Gronk way too closely this year.
It happens to everybody. It's happened to Gronk sooner than you would have liked and you would have thought. But Tom Brady is, as he said, the world's greatest to win and do what he's doing with what he has. It's remarkable.
I've got one last thing.
Coach is not bad there either.
One last point of order. There is no greater skill than moving a man from point A to point B against his will. And if you want to play catch in here, we can do that. But if we open up, if we do one-on-ones, I'll open a can of whoop ass on you right now. All right?
I'm just moving right out the way. I don't want none of that.
I don't think anyone could argue that Tom Brady shouldn't be in question in this top five conversation.
But was the season great for him? Was it great?
Russell Wilson, you got to argue his case as well. Time for Big Story. Greg Jennings and Mark Slareth in for Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Houshmandzadeh and Jason McIntyre are back. Let's move to Baltimore, where the Ravens host the Chargers on Sunday. on Sunday in a matchup of old man Philip Rivers and the youngest QB to ever start a playoff game, Lamar Jackson. Jackson, who turns 22 on Monday, has already proven a lot of doubters wrong and says he's planning to celebrate his birthday in style.
That win, I can taste it. It's like Thanksgiving, you know, that food, sweet potato pie. Definitely, you know, I'm trying to taste that victory for my birthday Monday, so yeah. This will be big.
Mark.
Yeah.
Do you like the confidence that Lamar Jackson is exuding going into his first playoff game?
Absolutely, 100%. You know, the question was, what would be a great birthday present? He said, that win. Like, I can taste that. I don't have any problem with what he's saying right there. And I tell you, I think part of that is the confidence he has in the coaches and the position they've put him in, whether it's Greg Roman, whether it's Marty Morningwig. It's the way that John Harbaugh wants to win a game. He wants to eat up that clock. He wants to reduce possessions. So a normal game is 12 to 13. You're going to get on the offensive side about 9 maybe, if you're lucky, because they're averaging over 230 yards rushing per game. They're going to eat up that clock. And they're not going to ask him to go out there and throw it 30 times. He's going to run it, you know, 15 to 17 times, designed runs. And I told you guys this yesterday, man, when you put them on film, I have never seen the size of holes that I have seen with what they're doing right now. And I know that the Chargers played them a couple weeks ago, so they've seen it. It's great. You can see it all day long. I mean, that's like seeing, you know what? Everybody's seen Tyreek Hill, the cheetah. You know what he still does? He still runs right by people. Like, that's what he does. So I love his confidence. I love the way I love where he's at right now. And he knows his coaching staff's going to put him in a position to have success.
I'm with you. I like what he's saying and where he's at. Furthermore, what else do we expect him to say? Like, what? You asked me what would I like for a birthday present, right? And I'm going into my first playoff game. I would love to have this win. And when you talked about his confidence in his coaches, mm-hmm. I think it even extends to the confidence he has in the guys around him.
Sure.
Understanding that I have a defense that will back me because of what we do offensively and running the ball. And we're like the – I look at the Baltimore Ravens. They're a bully, but I'm going to – in this analogy, I'm going to make them out to be the assassin. An assassin, you know what he's coming to do. You know what they're coming to do. The agenda, you see them coming. They have their knife, their weapon right in hand. It's just a matter of time of when they're going to pull that trigger and make it happen. Versus a sniper, where a sniper, you know a sniper's out there. You know what they're capable of, but they're not right in front of you, so you got to kind of duck and dodge. The Baltimore Ravens, you know who we are, what we do, and we have swag while we do it. You got to stop it.
Now, we got 3 offensive guys here. And I just wonder, is Anthony Lynn, the coach of the Chargers, going to pull that clip and call his defense in and show them that to open the defensive meeting today? Hey, guys, look what the other quarterback's saying, that he's going to beat you again. Remember what he did last time? And I just wonder if, and again, I like Lamar Jackson a lot. I'm rooting for him. Dating back to the draft, I love everything about this guy. I just wonder if this is maybe something he did not need to say. Like, listen, man, you already beat him once. You're on a roll. You've won 6 of 7. Do you need to say that? I mean, obviously, yes, we like confidence in our players. We like confidence in our TV hosts. Like, I don't like bulletin board material the week of a playoff game when you know that defense is out for revenge.
I think the bulletin board material is a little overstated. Like, okay, how about this? I'm a little uneasy about this game. I don't feel very confident, you know. I just hope we can get the W. I hope the offense plays well. You see that, you like, bruh. Yeah. Every athlete is full of confidence. And if he acted that way, Anthony Lynn would show him that and say, oh, man, he ain't too confident. They don't think they have a chance of beating us. He's supposed to act that way. Show it. Is the Chargers defense or the offense going to play any better by what Lamar Jackson has said or not said? Absolutely not. They're going to come out there to play. I want every player that I'm strapping it up with, believe in yourself. You are the best at everything you do. We should all have that mentality, because if you don't, something is wrong. I love it. I hope he plays well. And every athlete that's going to play this weekend all believe their team's going to win, whether they say it or not.
Should they say it? I guess that's the question.
If you're asked the question, answer it how you feel and answer it honestly.
To what you're saying, though, Jason, I don't mind what he said. I think with maturity, he'll understand how to deliver his message on whether or not could this potentially be something that will be lead to bulletin board material or will ignite the other team or throw fuel on the fire, so to speak. I think he'll mature into that.
Andrew Luck's not saying that this weekend.
Yeah, this isn't Andrew Luck's first go-round.
I know. But how about this? You're going into a playoff game, Greg. The opposing cornerback says, man, I'm going to lock down Jennings. Whew, he's not getting anything on me.
But he didn't say that.
Oh, okay, but again, he said
it
something.
It wasn't that braggadocious. He said nothing negative about it.
Do you want bulletin board material? Put on the tape. that's all you got to do is put on tape. Because here's what I love about the Baltimore Ravens. And these are the teams that I played on, and this is what I loved about our teams. We do what we do, and we just believe that we're going to bully you. We believe that we're better than you. We believe that we're going to out-execute you.
Stop it.
So this is what we are. Stop it. Yeah, what do you got
Good
for
luck.
Us? Yeah. And you know what? All you got to do is put on the film. Because, Lev, I'm telling you.
You don't think Phillip Rivers believes this? You best believe Phillip Rivers. Like, we're going to Baltimore, and we're going to park them. I don't like the way they beat us here. We're getting them back. 100% he feels that way. Yeah. I love it. I like it, of course.
I don't have any issue with it.
That Dude's Dudes is sponsored by Captain Morgan. Drink responsibly. Captain's orders. Greg Jennings and Mark Schlereth in for Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Houshmandzadeh and Jason McIntyre are back. Marcellus may not be here with us, but we've got another Big Ugly here to handle that Dude's Dudes for us. Big Stink, what you got?
I think we got that Big Pretty. Let's shuffle off.
You know what? I said that.
Okay, let's shuffle off to Buffalo, where the ultimate Buffalo soldier plays 13 seasons in the league. And you know what? When your defensive tackle nose guard gets to his last game, he announces it. Go ahead, get him the ball a little bit. Let's celebrate Kyle Williams right here. Nice stance, flat back. That's always good. Could have played offensive line. Now watch the Buffalo. Go ahead. That's Cameron Wake. Wham! Just knock him down. Put him on the ground right there. Now look at the route. What do you think? TJ, what do you think of that route? Greg? A little flat route right there.
He's going to use a little better swim move, but he caught the ball.
Real smooth, though, when you catch a turn up.
Try to throw the stab. That's not too bad for that dude's dude there. I love it. That's Kyle Williams. How about we go up to Seattle and Frank Clark? I'm telling you what, the get off this guy has on the defensive line of scrimmage is awesome. Oh. But we used to call this, as an offensive lineman, we call that the ninja move. And you know who it reminds me of? When you throw the ninja, that back arm, you catch somebody in the back of the helmet. Reminds me of this guy right here, Dwight Freeney. The ageless Dwight Freeney, even late in his career, he can still put you in the spin cycle right there, throw the ninja on the back helmet. On the backside of you. Now watch Holden here. Watch the get off up the field first. That sets up the offensive line. He's got to jump out there. Now watch that hand and that back arm catch you right in the ear hole right there and pull yourself through with that back arm spin move, the ninja right there. That puts Holden straight up in the spin cycle. Holden, you should have done what your last name said and you should have held him, right? Because that you ain't blocking that guy. That is a beautiful, beautiful execution and move by Frank Clark. And then let's go to number one, who I think is the best football player in the National Football League, and that is Aaron Donald. This dude is a straight-up freak show. I want you to watch the get-off. First off, he's 2 yards into the backfield before anybody else is even off the line of scrimmage, beats the back and the quarterback to the junction point right there. This dude's got a rocket on his back. He's like Bevo.
Special.
You know, remember Bevo? And yesterday, the video Bevo, the Texas mascot right there. And these guys are a bunch of matadors right there, a bunch of uggas on here. He comes off the ball. Look at the speed off the ball. Look at the penetration right there. Beats the quarterback and running back to the junction point. And now if a big wind blows up, watch McGlinchey right there. He'd take off. He'd be like a kite. It'd be like Mary Poppins. He'd be out of the stadium right there. Big gust of wind blew. That's Aaron Donald. I'm telling you what, to me, the best football player in the National Football League, bar none. And that is that dude's dudes.
That dude is special. And that dude right there is very special. Appreciate you, Mark.
Yeah.
Let's return now to Dallas, where it looked like the Cowboys' turnaround in the second half of the season would be enough to save Jason Garrett's job. But now, Adam Schefter says Garrett's future in Dallas isn't a given. If anything goes badly this weekend against Seattle on Saturday, we can all understand why. I just completely botched that, but don't worry about
it. Okay.
Garrett has been in Dallas. Dallas head coach since 2010 and has just one playoff win, not exactly the renaissance Jerry Jones was hoping for this decade. Mark, does Jason Garrett need a win to save his job?
Yeah, well, you know what's interesting about this? I mean, you certainly need a good performance. Maybe not a win, but you certainly have to have a good performance. But I think the thing that's interesting to me is Jason Garrett has never truly been empowered to be the head coach of this team. Like, he's been appointed, but he's never truly been empowered. And I think about this with the Dallas Cowboys right now. If there was an opening, if they decided that, hey, Jason Garrett has gotten us as far as Jason Garrett's going to get us, and we've seen this before from a player standpoint. We saw it in Minnesota. Hey, you know what? When we looked at the quarterback situation in Minnesota last year, Case Keenum's only going to get us to this point. We've got to get somebody else in there to get us over the top, to break through that kind of quote-unquote glass ceiling. If you feel like Jason Garrett has gotten you as high or as far as he can get you and he can't get you a playoff win, right now, if they bounced Jason Garrett out of Dallas, where would they be on the hierarchy of best jobs available, right? They'd be right there with Green Bay. They'd be right there. When you look at the talent, maybe the best young linebacking core in football, a great defensive front four, really good back end, one of the best offensive lines in football, the best back in the National Football League from a pure running standpoint. You know, they've got an all-star wide receiver. They would be right there with Cleveland and Green Bay as the best jobs. And by the way, big market, a team with a ton of money, a ton of money to spend in the cap. I think they might become the number one destination for any of these head coaches that are out there.
When I look at this situation, I look at it as a fire pit where that little pilot is always on, that fireplace pilot is always on. And this win could eliminate that or it could ignite it. And for me, I don't think that he has to get a win in order for his job to be saved. I think when you look at the grand scheme of everything that's going on in Dallas, the personnel that they've assembled, it was assembled a little late. Yes, defensively, they established who they were identity-wise. Offensively, they're a running team, but they acquired Amari Cooper late in the season to mesh with Dak Prescott. Give Jason Garrett a full offseason, OTAs, training camp, to really nurture these guys and see who they can really be coming into the following year. I just think that this game doesn't decide whether or not he'll be the head coach.
Greg, I'm going to have to make you got to get off the fence, buddy. I mean, is he in trouble or not? I'm telling you, if they get blown out here, I don't think they will. I like Dallas in this game. But despite how close Garrett is to Jerry Jones, you hear all the stories, you read the articles, they're tight. I mean, Jerry thinks of him like a son. That's how long they've been together. But you do wonder if this is a 27-6 game and Jason Garrett's floundering in the red zone. We talked about that earlier. I do think he could get fired. I would put it about 25% chance that he's
Did
fired
you just
if
say
they get
I was
blown
on
out.
The fence? I mean,
25%. That's a number. I put a number on it.
Because you put a number on it.
Yes, that's much more than
Now, is this job attractive to the top upper echelon head coaches? Because you know Jerry Jones is going to micromanage you. Is that it's attractive from a talent standpoint and the personnel that they have, but is it attractive to where I can coach the team how I want to coach it and not have somebody over my shoulder telling me what to do and what not? I'm the coach. Is it attractive from that perspective? If they get blown out, he needs to go. They have the better roster. If he gets blown out, you got Jerry Jones looking at it from this perspective. I have a really good team. We need to do something now. If he can't do this, I need to get somebody in here that can.
But does it take them getting blown out? Either they're with him or they're not moving forward. Does it take him needing to get blown out?
I mean, again, his playoff losses are to Aaron Rodgers in an all-time performance. That final drive was incredible. And now you got Russell Wilson, a Super Bowl-winning quarterback, you just said, top five quarterback in the league. I want to quickly address the opening. I'm telling you, I know Lincoln Riley said, I'm happy at Oklahoma. This is a Texas guy. And as you said, this is a perfect roster right here. You got players at every position that matters. I do believe Lincoln Riley would listen if Jerry Jones called him off the loss.
I mean, he's young enough to where he can be micro. There's no established coach will go in there and say, all right, Jerry.
If you're not giving Bill Parcells full control of your organization, right?
Right.
You're not giving anybody full control.
But there's only 32 of these in the world. And so being a head coach in the NFL is something special. So it's going to be hard for anybody to turn them down.
And remember, Jerry's given him a lot of leeway here, okay? Cleveland, which you said is attractive, and no doubt that roster's sick. their owner, their situation, I mean, they're firing coaches at the drop of a hat the last 5 years. A lot of organizations are like that. Like Arizona just fired a coach after 1 year. I know he was bad, but I think Jerry's almost undervalued as a place to go here, given the roster.
So we're not giving him no chance to really work with Amari Cooper, because he did acquire Amari Cooper late.
He's had like nine games, Greg.
And that's when you acquire him late, man. This is football. Football's universal. Put in some schemes, be creative, and let's go. It don't take a whole offseason.
I understand that, but we're holding them to what happened before getting Amari Cooper as well. That's what their record is going to place them. The things that transpired before acquiring Amari Cooper and then what acquired after Amari Cooper got there, it was a different story.
So go win this game,
give them a – you're right. So that's what I'm saying. Does it require them to not get blown out for my job to be saved if I'm Jason Garrett?
It's either you win or you lose. You can't lose ugly. That, like, you don't want to be losing to where we turn the TV like, oh, this game is over. You can't have that type of loss.
Well, people might stick around to watch Jerry Jones in the box up top be very angry when Jason Garrett's blowing the game in the fourth quarter.
Stop it. Welcome back. Greg Jennings and Mark Schlereth in for Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Houshmandzadeh, Jason McIntyre are back. Let's move to San Francisco, where the 49ers legend Jerry Rice says he wants his old team to pursue a trade for Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham Jr. Brown's antics are pretty fresh in our minds this week, and the often injured and emotional Beckham has plenty of his own baggage. Mark, who would you rather trade for, Brown or Beckham?
Man, you put it to me, man. This is a hard one for me, right?
I'm playing
position of anonymity, and so if I was going to do it, I would go with Odell Beckham Jr. I just think that, and I keep looking back, yeah, he's had some issues, but it hasn't been, I'm not showing up to practice, I'm not working out, I'm not showing up to meetings. And I can't help but think of this video when he actually signed that contract, and he had teammates, if you remember. That guy's videoing, they're singing the money, money, money. They're like celebrating his contract with him. At least that tells me that guys are in tune with Odell Beckham Jr. Like, they're there. Like, Antonio Brown feels like that family member to me that keeps on breaking the family rules and keeps on, keeps on acting out within the family, and to the point where you get to finally going, you know, hey, you need to move out of my house, right? You cannot continue to do the things you're doing in my house. Like, as a father, you get to that point where you're nurturing your kids and you're forgiving them for mistakes and you're trying to coach them up and you're trying to do, and eventually you get to a point where, like, if you're gonna behave like this, you can no longer live in my house. And I feel like that's where Pittsburgh is with Antonio right now.
For me, I'm with you. I'll take Odell Beckham all day. And it's not about the stats and the numbers, because they both put up numbers. They both, given a great quarterback, will light the NFL on fire. But for me, when I look at Odell Beckham Jr., I feel like he's gotten a bad rap. And some of it he's brought on himself, but some of it, when you look at it, it's frustration at who's throwing the football to me. When with Antonio Brown, it's sure like selfishness. Like, it's there is no validation to why are you upset? Well, with Odell Beckham, he has every reason. This has always been him. He's made Eli Manning better. He's extended Eli Manning's career. And so when I look at these two, there is no doubt in my mind who I would want on my team. It would be Odell Beckham.
Oh, boy. I guess I'm on an island here. Give me Antonio Brown. Give me Antonio Brown. Okay. First of all, Mark, amazing point with Odell Beckham is loved by his teammates. I had not considered that. That's true. But then it got me thinking about Pittsburgh and this Antonio Brown situation. So, guys, this story came out. It's been a week. Has anybody defended Ben Roethlisberger? Any of his players have come out and publicly defended Ben versus Antonio Brown? I know Tomlin's supposed to be a player's coach. I do wonder about the dynamic in that locker room. I don't know if it's all on Brown. Now, Beckham is younger. I think he's 26. Mm-hmm. But he's been injured. 3 of the 5 years he's been in the NFL, he's been hurt. We know he's obviously dynamic and talented. Some of the me first, the contract demands and getting that big contract. I would lean Antonio Brown. I think San Francisco would probably go Odell. But if I'm my New York Jets, Antonio Brown, 2 years, there's an out in the contract. Oh, my goodness. I think Antonio Brown, who led the NFL in TDs this year, I believe, with 15 receiving, I go Brown
with
over
a
Beckham.
Sam Darnold at quarterback?
I'm going Odell Beckham for one reason. He's 26. Antonio Brown is 30. I mean, that right there is the no-brainer. He's 26 years old. Antonio Brown is 30 years old. Just from that talent-wise, it's what and what. It's which flavor do you like, chocolate or vanilla? They're both ballers. It's what you said. And see, this Antonio Brown got his start. People remember now, Mike Wallace was a guy they wanted to re-sign.
Yes.
They did not re-sign him, and then they signed Antonio Brown. And at that time, everybody was like, what is going on? You let Mike Wallace, they'd seen Antonio Brown in practice, but what has happened is they've empowered him so much in Pittsburgh. When they played the Denver Broncos and Ben Roethlisberger said, I should have thrown the ball all four times of Juju, that was the beginning of the end. You can't do that. Antonio Brown heard that and was like, we would never be cool. We would never be cool. And be like Odell Beckham, they both have their – every player has a bit of selfishness in them. Every player does. Every player. But just 26 and 30, I'm taking a younger guy.
Okay, hold on, Greg. What? Injuries, okay? Last 5 years, again, we talked about Odell Beckham missing parts of the last 3 years. Antonio Brown's missed 3 games in 5 years, okay? Now,
do
Greg.
You count Sunday?
Yeah, that's counted.
No,
that's,
you don't even count that.
That's counted. I looked at the
number. You shouldn't even count that one.
That is counted, TJ. Greg, I want to put back. You mentioned Odell has, helped Eli's career here at the end. You know, Eli statistically had one of the best seasons of his career without Odell Beckham this year.
Beckham was hurt a lot of the year. Listen.
He missed half the season.
When you are getting your butt whipped the whole game, you're going to throw for a lot of garbage yards at the – hey, how
the
many games have you played in?
TJ, was,
you know how many
100-yard
games I had
before
when we were getting beat? And I get like 60 yards on the last drive because they're garbage yards.
One of the completion percentage numbers and one of the reasons, and this is why statistics always drive me crazy, is they get elevated. How many catches did Saquon Barkley have?
Yeah, a lot.
About 85.
They don't need Odell Beckham, Mark. You got to
go with what works. But for me, when I look at Antonio Brown and the frustration that where it stems from, is he knows that that Pittsburgh Steelers organization, he knows what they do. And what I mean by that is they produce and reproduce wide receivers. He knows that, look, it happened to Mike Wallace. It happened to Santonio Holmes. Plaxico Burress, Emmanuel Sanders. It can happen to me, but I'm trying to defy these odds by causing this big rift and say what I want and demand what I want and pose another angle to where these guys didn't do it to kind of shun off Juju a little longer than what they were able to do me. I just think that when it comes to that, I don't want to deal with that. The age... Give me Odell Beckham Jr.
They're trading Antonio. If they don't trade Antonio Brown, something is wrong with the Pittsburgh Steelers. If culture and how our team is constructed and how it's ran
if it
matters,
means anything.
They have to get rid of him.
Yeah, I think I agree with all of you. To New York we go, where Eli Manning's future with the Giants very much up in the air. When asked yesterday if he's played his last game with the team, Eli said, quote, we'll see. And Giants GM Dave Gettleman didn't exactly give Eli a vote of confidence. Listen to this.
I'm committed to making the best decision in the interest of the New York football Giants. That's what I'm committed to do. We're in the evaluation process, okay? I know that, you know, you guys want answers now, but very frankly, I didn't come in yesterday. So I've got to do what I do, which is get in my office and watch film. My commitment is to make this team the best team it can be. And if that happens to have Eli playing quarterback, it does.
Well, Dave Gettleman talking a lot about commitment. So should they already make a commitment? Should they commit to Eli Manning in the future this year?
I like what he said. I like his approach. I think Eli Manning is a part of their future, specifically just for one reason and one reason only, for time. For time's sake. It gives them time. It buys them time to find out who's going to take over at this quarterback position and lead this New York Football Giants organization and franchise moving forward. That is the only reason why I believe Dave Gettleman has a decision in front of him that is really simple. Unless you can clearly identify who you're going to bring in and replace Eli right now, Eli's your guy.
Here's what I would say about that, and I'm with you 100% because I look at it like, okay, who's out there? We're going to go out and get 11-year veteran Joe Flacco, who's had really hasn't had great seasons and is hurt this year and got replaced by, you know, a rookie? Is that where we're going to go? Is it Nick Foles, who's really only had, like, he's had a couple of playoff runs last year. Not last year was great, don't get me wrong, but he had the run in Philadelphia in the purely Chip Kelly spread offense. Now he's had a couple of playoff runs here toward the end of the season where he's played really well. I'm not going to take that away from him. In a open, kind of more wide open collegiate type system, you're going to go to the Giants and Pat Shurmur where they're going to, you know, that's not the system they run. The year before in Minnesota, they led the league in attempts, or second in the league in attempts. So you're just, I just don't know that that's a great fit. So is it Blake Bortles? I mean, which direction are you going in? I don't think there's a great. I don't think there's
a
great.
Blake Bortles. Right. Oh my God!
What do you have against Bortles?
But there's no great direction there. Is any of those? If you go out and get, okay, I'll give you. Go out and get Nick Foles. But are you gonna say we're gonna get Nick Foles and we're gonna just dump Eli Manning?
How about this? How about Ryan Tannehill in Miami? They're clearly unhappy with him. They're moving on from their coach. Ryan Tannehill could be an option. Maybe Jameis Winston and the Bucs. I know they appear to be giving it one more chance.
Jameis Winston is not leaving Tampa Bay.
$20 million, smart move by them. If I'm the Giants, I just keep Eli. I know I kind of defended him a couple minutes ago. I don't think he was awful this season. I don't think he was a bottom five quarterback in the league. I really think that you draft a quarterback maybe second or third round, and then this is Eli's final year, and you draft a real quarterback in the first round the following year.
All right, I'm about to give the Giants a plan on how to proceed.
Okay.
This is what I do. I commit to Eli one more year, and the only reason is because I know we're going to lose. I solidify my offensive defensive lines this year in the draft, the 2020 draft, and free agency this year and the following year. I do whatever I can to draft Tua, or Justin Herbert, whoever I perceive to be the best quarterback. The way the NFL is going now is it's showing if you have a great team around a rookie quarterback or a young quarterback on a rookie contract, you can be very successful. Patrick Mahomes, Jared Goff, Mitchell Trubisky, Deshaun Watson. You can go on and on. Carson Wentz. That's the way the NFL is going now. Solidify your offensive, defensive lines. They already have a running back. They have the receivers. Solidify those guys up front. Draft a rookie quarterback in the 2020 draft, whether it's Tua or Justin Herbert, and you got a chance for the next 5 or 6 years.
Let me push back on that. And that's a great strategy. But, TJ, try to sell that to Pat Shurmur. Do you know how bad they have to be to draft Tua? Because he's a top five pick. You basically are saying, Giants, hey, let's just tank next year and get Tua.
You do whatever listen. You got to trade picks to get. You talking about bringing in Tannehill. You're going to be bad anyway.
You're talking about
draft the second or third round quarterback. You're going to be bad anyway.
They can't be bad and get Tua because Shurmur knows, shucks, man, we weren't good this year. If I win 3 or 4 games next year, I may not be here.
But if try to solidify that line, they won't be. Yeah. If you solidify that offensive line like the Colts did with Andrew Luck, he'll have more time in the pocket. He'll have some success.
I like where you're going. I don't love it because of Odell Beckham. With his frustrations already with Eli.
Well, we already traded him to San Francisco. I know.
with his frustrations already with Eli, you bring in a young guy who can't get him the ball the way that he wants to have the ball. That's going to create even more frustration.
If you're winning games, this is where the NFL is going. I mean, nobody thought Carson Wentz would come in and do what he did. This is the way to end it. If you get a good creative coach, Odell Beckham will get his targets. Now, will he get 120 catches? Maybe not, but you'll get 90. That's more than enough.
Maybe. Welcome back. Greg Jennings and Mark Schlereth in for Whitlock and Wiley. Jason McIntyre is back. And we're now joined by NBA champion Dante Jones. Let's move to the Staples Center, where the L.A. native Paul George got booed by Lakers fans last night. Not that it slowed him down at all. George scored 37 and led the Thunder to a win, with LeBron James missing his 4th straight game. But for some reason, LeBron actually chose to watch the end of the game from the tunnel with Magic and GM Rob Pelinka instead of on the bench with the rest of his team. Now, normally, I would throw this to you, Dante. I would.
Yeah, you got it.
But I got to weigh in on this really quick.
Enjoy.
Yeah, please.
I absolutely hated this decision by LeBron James. I absolutely hated it. Because he's still in uniform. You're still a part of the team. I get it. You got a lot of strings that you can pull. And you got a lot of say. But if you're in with me, you're in with me. You're on the court with me, you're on the court with me. Don't judge me. Don't talk about me while I'm playing. Help me while I'm playing. We still have an opportunity to win ball games, and you're not even on the bench. If I'm a young guy and you say, I like the young guys that we got on this team, I think we can do some special things, got a lot of talent. Well, I need my guy. I need the guy who we lean to, who we want to look forward to or look to give us some insight on the end of the bench, but he's not even there. He's not even there. He's with the general manager and Magic Johnson.
Right, and why? Why? Because the trade deadline's 5 days away, and if you have a manager's meeting, for crying out loud, you need all the managers there. He's part of management. 5 weeks away, the trade deadline.
I'm not with that, Mark.
He's down there. They're having a manager. He's in charge. He's with the president. He's with the GM, and he's the grand poobah of all things basketball.
There's other times you can do that.
I think we take some things out of context. Do we know how he got there? Do we know if he went to the bathroom and Magic tapped him on the shoulder and said, you know what, Bron, what do you think about this? What are we seeing out here? Like, he's talking to an all-time great who happens to be the president of the organization that he plays for. And if he wants to talk to you, you talk to him no matter where you're at. But it just so happened to be in the tunnel. To have a conversation about basketball with Magic Johnson, about the team that we both represent, is never a bad time.
Yes, Dante Smart, man.
Before you go,
never a bad time. Because you could use some of that information. You know, you don't know if Magic said, you know what, tell Lonzo this for me because I see this in this capacity, and bring it to the bench. Because Magic can't go to the bench and be like Lonzo and talk to him. Magic can't talk to the players right now. But Magic also sees the game from a Hall of Fame perspective. So Bron is an extension of him on the bench. It just was a conversation between two all-time greats.
Okay, I'm not buying that because in this game earlier, this is what he showed us on the bench.
And he was on the bench. Bron was on the bench.
He was on the bench.
And
look,
got up
look at plays being made. Look at LeBron on the bench. And I'm a LeBron fan now. I love LeBron. I love what he does. But look at all these plays being made by his teammates. What is he doing?
Y'all not panning to the ones when they went, when they scored like three buckets in a row. He got up to congratulate the young kids, man. Y'all only pick what you want to pick.
I know that's
cool.
Your guy.
Hey, take it out of context, man. Listen, did you see any other plays where he sat there for a whole game like this?
Jennings.
I doubt it.
Listen, I thought I had great points. That was tremendous, Dante. Let me add another layer here. To me, this is leadership. Okay? Last week, the Lakers, without LeBron, choked away a 15-point lead in the fourth to the Kings. Okay? Here we are another week later. They're leading in the fourth, and they clang a bunch of free throws, and they waste another win. They fall to eighth in the West. LeBron, as Mark said, is going over to leadership. Hey, guys, y'all better step up. This is unacceptable. I am not losing this way. And as Mark and Dante alluded to, hey, listen, nobody's safe here. I'm safe here if I'm LeBron. Everybody else? Hey, Brandon Ingram, step it up. Lonzo, why don't you shoot better than 50% from the line? This is unacceptable, man.
Because I'm having the best year of my career, right? Is that what LeBron is saying?
I mean, he's playing great, but he's LeBron James great.
But it shows his impact on the court as well. And even Lance Stephenson said, LeBron not being here is a voice of leadership, a voice of direction that we just don't have, and it's kind of quiet out there. And without him, it's showing why he's the MVP this year, because that team is a total different team than what it is when he's not there.
And now Kuzma got hurt last night too, so this was the game.
So you're in tough.
Brandon,
could they be talking about Kuz?
Is
Kuz gonna be okay? Like, only Magic knows some of these questions.
Is that gonna help us win this game tonight?
But there's nothing Bron can do to give you to win that game. The players win the game. Luke is going to coach, but what kind of inspiration do you think he's going to be able to put in these kids' ears to win a game to be able to shoot from the free throw line?
If I'm a young player and I have a question or there's something that I want to look to you for and you're not there, what do you expect me to do?
You were there the majority. 99% of the night he was there. He went and had a small conversation with Matt. You going to demonize him for it?
I'm not demonizing
him
for it.
You can't go after LeBron with Dante Jones.
He's too good. Let's break this. I think sometimes we go crazy on every last thing he does. We pick it apart. If the man went to the bathroom, you should have held that for 48 minutes because it's your responsibility. No, come on, fellas.
He needed more popcorn, right? He just had to go get a snack.
Look, guys.
Can't go after LeBron.
You can't do that. He's still in the Lakers uniform. He's not upstairs in management full time. I need you to be on the bench.
He is part-time management. Okay, let's move on.
True story.
Yeah, let's move on to the Rockets, who will face off with the Warriors tonight. Houston has been on a tear lately, winning 10 of their last 11, and nobody's been hotter than James Harden, who scored at least 40 in four straight games yesterday. Harden made it clear he's chasing a second straight MVP award.
No, I need it. I need it, for sure. And I'm going to give it. So, individually, got to bring it every night and making sure that guys are right around me and I lock in is on the same level. It's a great feeling, but individually, like I said, I got to make sure I'm on my A game every night. And that's not scoring, that's just being a leader. It's making sure that I'm communicating with my guys and we're putting ourselves in position to win games.
All right, Dante, is Harden too focused on individual accomplishments?
No, because he knows an individual accomplishment leads to organizational success. The last time I was an MVP, what were we? Number one in the West? Did we have a great season? Did we come one game from going to the finals? Like, if I operate at this level, if I'm breaking records with a 10-game stretch, and we won 10 out of 11. So what that equals, if I operate at this level, it equals wins, it equals moving up in the Western Conference standards. It's not as loaded. It was not as simplistic as it sounds. It's loaded in that if I handle myself in this capacity, we win, we're great, and we will all win at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, I agree with you 100%. Mm. This is who James Harden has to be in order for that Houston Rockets team to be relevant in the West. If he doesn't do this, if he doesn't perform at an MVP level every single night, night in, night out, they have no chance. With or without CP3, this is who he has to be. I like it 100%.
Come on. Really? December? You like him going off in December, killing teams with 40 a game. I like James Harden. I do. He's a tremendous player. He's unguardable right now. I would say, and again, I'm not in James Harden's spot, but I would just say, hey, man, I'm doing everything I can do. I don't care about individual awards. I need a ring. I need my teammates not missing 27 three-pointers in a row in Game 7. I can't do this alone. I can't beat the Warriors. I need help. He should send a signal to his teammates he needs help, not, hey, man, I need another MVP award.
So we give that award to the best player generally on the best team. So if I'm the MVP, right, if I'm the MVP, I'm on the best team. So that means I'm doing what is necessary to be on the best team in basketball. He's not saying that because he's not saying I'm getting the most improved or I'm going to be an all-star. I'm going to be the MVP. So what comes with the MVP is winning. Period, point blank. Anthony Davis has the best PR in basketball. Is he MVP candidate right now? No. He has the best stats. Boogie Cousins had amazing stats for years with Sacramento. Was he an MVP candidate? No, it's not about stats. It's about winning and being the best.
So we've now seen James Harden 2 years in a row have great regular seasons. Awesome. What has happened in the postseason? He has worn down and melted down in important games against, I believe it was the Spurs, and now the Warriors. You can't waste your energy playing 46 minutes a night in December to torch the Jazz.
Because you have to get a great seed. You have to get home court advantage.
You got to get in the dance.
CP can carry and can help that carry that weight in the conference finals. I'm sorry, but he has to be healthy. And when he's healthy, they're a tough thing to deal with.
See, this is what I hate about MVPs.
Yes.
Okay, this is what I hate. Because it ends up being who wins and who scores the most. Like, I want to know who's the best player. Like, who plays defense, who does all the ancillary things to me that come to winning championships. The last 15 MVPs in the National Basketball Association, three of them made the finals. LeBron twice. Steph Curry once. They happen to be the best players on the planet. So that's the only thing that bothers me about MVP award. You've won an MVP. I'd like to – I understand that you know, it comes together, right? I understand that he's got to score. He's got to lead his team. I'd just rather you talk about, man, I want to win a championship. I want our team to win a championship rather than I got to press for another MVP.
Yeah. That's I got to get that hardware.
Maybe that is just semantics with me.
It is.
And maybe it's just my football mentality.
I think it is because even if you say the only three of them won championships, but if you're an MVP, you're in the hunt for a championship. You're not a first round, a team that's going to be predicted to lose in the first round. You're a team that's in the hunt for a championship and going to be a championship contender. That's all you can ask for out of your season because there's only a couple teams that are contending for a championship in the NBA.
And the reason why the Houston Rockets were where they were even last season was because of that man doing special things like what he's doing now. And so for me, I have no problem with it. This is a lot different than what we talked about the other day about the GOAT. About saying I'm the
Greg, I can't place it. What happened? Where was the MVP in Game 7 at home when they were up by 11 at halftime against the Warriors? I can't.
Time out. It's two different seasons. The regular season, the first round, the second round, conference finals and the finals are all different styles of basketball. So he has to adjust, and it takes time to learn how to win a championship. It's not something that you just translate, because you don't know how physical it is in the conference finals until you actually get there. And then you don't know how physical it is in the finals until you get there. He's been to both. He knows about both. But he needs help. You need a team. You need a secondary person that can take that pressure off.
So why not say that instead of say, oh, because, I need another MVP?
Because right now, I don't have Chris ready. He's not available to me right now. You're asking me a question in the moment.
But they haven't had Chris while they're getting hot.
We need to start asking the media about the questions that they're asking rather than the way people answer them.
That's fair.
Basically, what he's telling you is James Harden is that dude, and if that
and respect him for what he's doing.
Your buddy LeBron is the MVP.
We talk about James Harden right now. We ain't talking about LeBron.
He's doing one of us now, though.
And I respect it. Let's ask the right question.
27, Mark.
27
straight this season, Game 7. At home.
Welcome back. Jennings and Slareth in for Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Houshmandzadeh and Dante Jones are back. Time for Antisocial. Our social media manager, Darnell Smith, is here to guide us. What you got for us, Darnell?
Big Swole, man. That's my new nickname,
Big Swizzle.
All right, man. Starting off with Antonio Brown, who appeared on a new Fox TV show called The Masked Singer last night. But that's not the main reason he's been in the headlines this week. Not that ABC's bothered about all the noise. Yesterday, during Mike Thomas' news conference, Brown was joking around on James Harrison's Instagram story. He posted this cryptic message on his own Instagram account, and even unfollow the Steelers on all social media. Guys, AB's acting like a straight-up troll here. Y'all think he's going to come back to haunt him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think so, man. I think when you step outside too far, you either going to go step out in the cold or you're going to step out and get burned. And one of the two going to happen. He's going to freeze by himself or he's going to burn by himself. That's the only way I look at it.
I will disagree with you on this. I think he's doing exactly what he wants to do, is to get bounced out of Pittsburgh. And I will tell you, with talent, you know, there's this talent to headache equation in the National Football League. When the headache becomes bigger than the talent, you no longer get to have a job. That talent is so supreme. He's so gifted that somebody, and I know this about coaches, you think the egos are big downstairs in the locker room, walk upstairs. Like, some of the biggest egos I've ever met are in the coaching staff, right? And there's not one coach that won't say, under my expert tutelage, I can get this guy to do what I need him to do. Like, that's just my take on Antonio Brown. He'll be somewhere.
Yeah, is he trolling him? Is it going to come back to hunt him? No, because he's a baller. He doesn't want to play in Pittsburgh any longer. That's bottom one. You unfollow, and it's not a big deal. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
He don't want to play in Pittsburgh. It looks like Pittsburgh don't want him there. They need to move on. They'll still have team success. He's going to have success because his talent – is far greater than his personality. Right. And once that's reversed, he'll be outside of football. That's when he'll burn or freeze in the cold.
You have a leash when you have talent. And
yes.
End of the day, he's not doing anything destructive to anybody else. He's not in trouble with the law. He's just using his personality to get what he wants. And I think he'll find a team and he'll be able to maneuver and be happy, and I think both sides will move on.
All right, what else you got for us, Darnell?
All right, man, sticking with this story, players across the league are already trying to recruit AB to their teams. Jarvis Landry posted this Pro Bowl picture of him and AB together. Fellow Steelers cast off Le'Veon Bell asked him which team should they go to next.
Uh-oh.
Jets safety Jamal Adams tweeted out how much he would be appreciated in the NYC, and Niners tight end George Kittle acted like Jacoby Brissett shouting out Sandra Bullock with this simple, "Sup?"
Stop.
All right, do these guys look too thirsty here?
Hey, no, this is all fun. This is like, look, hey, you want, to your point,
right,
like you just said, you want out of there, we want you over here. Right. Like, hey, they're garbage, our treasure, let's come over here. Let's make this happen.
Here's my only thing, though. If I was an all-star tight end and you and I were playing together, and you're playing receiver and I'm an all-star tight end, and somebody like Antonio Brown gets on the market and you and I are tight, and I say, "Hey, what's up, man? You want to come over here and play? We can replace Greg." Like, I mean, you know what I'm saying? That's the only thing that bothers me a little bit.
Nah, for me, go to the Jets. They have the cap space. They got a rookie quarterback, Sam Darnold, Le'Veon Bell, AB. Man, this is players having fun. What we should have had was, yesterday, James Harrison, why don't you FaceTime and make this live on Fox
right now?
What y'all really talking about? Mm-hmm. But it's the players having fun. When you're a good player, everybody wants you on your team. Yeah. And so AB's a baller. He probably has about 3 to 4 years of still balling. And there you go. They want him on his team.
Game recognized game. When the players want you, then that's when you're valuable. And the players should speak up if they want to win and they want somebody to think that can help them advance to the championship. So I think he moves the needle in football like that. If you add him to your team, he's a weapon that could bring you to a championship.
He just changed his Instagram to AB and then put in quotations, always balling.
What else you got for us, Darnell?
All right, man, back to a game you guys discussed earlier. Paul George played against the Lakers at Staples Center for the first time since re-signing with the Thunder, and the fans let him have it. From pregame until the last whistle, LA fans booed PG every time he touched the ball. There seemed to be mixed feelings about it on social media, but one guy tweeted out that he thought it was petty. All right, I'm a Lakers fan myself. I thought the booing was unnecessary, but I want to ask a guy who played in the league. So, Dante, what do you think?
I think it was petty on a Lakers fan's perspective, but I understand why it was petty, because you have an LA kid who has one of the only opportunities to be a Laker, and they thought that you would come home and lead the charge, and they're upset. But I think it should only go down for one time. It shouldn't be a consistent thing. You boo Paul George. You don't respect his decision, which is fine as fans, but you move on and you just concentrate on your team that you have right now, which is in a little bit of trouble.
I love it. I love sports hate. Sports hate's a great thing, right?
I loved going to
stadiums where it was hard to play and some dude's hanging over the edge right in your ear calling you, you know, telling you how bad you stink. And I'm all for it.
I'm with you. Give me that. That's why he dropped 37 on you.
Yeah. It's dangerous to do that to a player that has that much firepower. Absolutely.
And that's a sign of respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If he was a bum, they wouldn't have paid any attention. It's a sign of respect. We really wanted you to come play with us, bro. Why'd you do us like that?
We gonna let you know and boo you.
That's a sign of respect. For me, I'm sure he probably was like, damn, y'all gonna boo me the entire game?
I was warming up in New England in the end zone, warming up before a game, and I had one dude in the back of the end zone going, Skalilareth! You're a bum the whole game. And I was like, that is great. You don't even know my name. This is awesome. I love it. I think
it's
great.
What else you got for us, Darnell?
All right, man. Last but not least, this morning on First Things First, my guy Chris Carter was talking about Mitch Trubisky ahead of the big playoff game this weekend. Take a listen.
Mitch Trubisky is a better athlete probably than Dak Prescott,
yes,
definitely. But on the level with Russell and not as good as Deshaun Watson, who is a super duper athlete. But that is the type of athletic ability Mitch Trubisky has.
All right, y'all comfortable with Chris putting him on the same sentence as Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson?
When he's talking about athletic ability, yeah. I've been around Mitchell Trubisky. He's athletic now. He might be a white boy, but that boy can go. He has everything that he needs to be successful at that position. He just needs a little bit more time.
Yeah, he is a phenomenal athlete. And when you watch him play and then you watch Matt Nagy and the design, they use him outside the pocket. They have a bunch of boot keep stuff. That's the way they use him because he is that athletic. So he's one of the best running quarterbacks in the league. I would venture to guess before Lamar Jackson started playing, he was probably leading the league or close to it as far as quarterback rushing is concerned. The guy is a great athlete.
Having athleticism and being an athlete is two different things.
Mm.
Like, he's fast, but laterally, he's not moving like Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson. He can straight line go, but people, you have to differentiate. He has great athleticism to he's a great athlete. Those are two different things. Is he a good athlete? Yeah, but Russell Wilson has shown us. He can play football and baseball.
Right.
Deshaun Watson. So I wouldn't put it on that, but yeah, to me, it's two different things. It's athleticism and being an athlete.
Totally agree with you. Like, he has to differentiate himself from the other athletic quarterbacks. And is he on their level? No. He is athletic, but he's not the supreme athlete as well.
All right, appreciate you, Darnell. We got to go. All right, earlier in the show, we talked about Lamar Jackson, who will make his first playoff start Sunday. A day before his 22nd birthday, Lamar turned the Ravens season around when he took over as starter, and his success has surprised a lot of people. Let's get to our approval ratings. All right, Mark, for me, mm-hmm. I have him in the all-star category at 72 job performance. I got him at, 14, all-time great status, 15. Character 22, authenticity at 22, or character at 21, authenticity at 22. I just think that when I look at his job performance, he's done a great job of getting his team into the playoffs. All-time great. Obviously, we can't give him too high of a score there because He just hasn't proven a lot. He has a lot more that he needs to work on. But let's what you got?
All right, so I'm going to go job performance first and foremost. I gave him a 20, much higher than what you gave him. And I gave him the 20 because what he's asked to do is run the ball 17 carries a game. If you extrapolated that over the course of a season, there'd only be one running back that had more carries than him, and that'd be Ezekiel Elliott. And then when I start looking at all-time great status, you know, he's not there yet. He doesn't throw the football, but everything else I gave him 20s on. So I've got him in the same vicinity as you have him right there. So the guy has been absolutely unbelievable getting them into this playoff run and getting them into that offense that he structures and that he can run. So I think I look at that all-star category. There's no question in my mind.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I see your 20 for his job performance. I find that hard to give him that high of a score because he hasn't proven that he can throw the ball as effective.
They don't need to throw the ball.
You're right. You're right. You're absolutely right.
All right.
I agree with you. You got it.
Okay.